Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello friends, and welcome back to the Signal podcast from Christians in Media. I'm your host, James Poulter. As we head into the Christmas period, we wanted to bring you this special conversation with a dear friend and legendary broadcaster, Sheridan Voysey. Many of you may know Sheridan from his appearances on Pause for Thoughts on Radio 2 with Chris Evans, or on the multiple different campaigns that he has been running this year around some of his book launches and many of his other media appearances at also many conferences throughout the UK. Sheridan has been a friend and collaborator for many years, and I wanted to sit down and get the latest from him on what he is doing across the three main areas he works in as a writer, a broadcaster, and a speaker. And so I took some time to sit with Sheridan and really dive into some of what's been going on in his life this year, as well as also some back history of his career. We spent some time together at Henrywood House in central London, home of things like Tog Studios and right next door to the BBC. And in this conversation, we go into all sorts of areas of Sheridan's life and career, and I think you're going to find it fascinating, encouraging, and challenging. We got into some really interesting issues. Coming up at the end of the show, I'll be giving you a forecast towards a few of the things that are coming up. But here, I would hope you will enjoy a special extended conversation with my dear friend, Sheridan Voysey. Well, welcome to this special long-form episode of Signal from Christians in Media under our new banner, which is nice to have. And I am very pleased to introduce you to a friend and collaborator for a while back now, Sheridan Voysey, who is joining us in not Wogan House, where you've just come from this morning, but Henrywood House, just a couple of doors down the road on Regent Street here in the heart of Westminster, to really just chat a little bit about what you've been doing as a Christian in the media for a number of years now. I'm glad we have that name. It kind of makes it a little bit easier to have these conversations. Sheridan, why don't you try and explain to us what have you been doing recently?
What do I do? Well, thank you, James. Thank you for having me on the podcast. And you know, that I'm a big fan of yours and also Christians in the Media as well. So, the last 20, 25 years, it's been writing, speaking, broadcasting. Those have been my three things. Mm. And the majority of time has been spent with broadcasting.
Yeah.
Until I then moved to the UK from Australia in 2011, where then it's been primarily writing, speaking, and broadcasting.
Right. Yeah.
So while I'm
highlight
in the middle. Yeah.
Okay.
So while I'm not hosting a show anymore, which I miss every day, I do get to do things like Pause for Thought on Radio 2, and find myself on the other side of the desk, probably on average maybe once every fortnight now, contributing to some show. Here in the UK, Australia, the US, South Africa sometimes, with my kind of author's hat on.
Right.
So it's been a really interesting switch around of being, those years, hosting to then primarily as a contributor bringing something else. And it's got me really thinking in the last few years, would I ever go back to hosting shows? Because when you host, you are there to facilitate somebody else's story and it's hard to bring your own content in.
Yeah.
So I'm in the last few years have been the season of kind of bringing my own content, which is really, really delightful. So
let's take us back then. So a number of years ago now, you were hosting this open house on national radio in Australia. What was it like to have that
ability to speak into so many people's lives, particularly when you are coming from a perspective of having faith and having a perspective on the world that not everybody shares. What were just some of the things that you learned doing that every day?
Great question. Actually, when I was hosting it, it was a weekly show, and we put pretty much two full-time staff into one Sunday night three-hour show. So you can imagine there was quite a lot going into it. So it was a very fast-paced show, something changing every 7 or 8 minutes, apart from then the feature guest, which could go 20, 25 minutes. The whole idea was to engage secular people with Christian ideas in a way that wouldn't be pushing them into a corner and say, you know, make a commitment to Jesus, you know, repent or burn, kind of thing.
Pads in D just begins and the swell reaches you kind of come into their ears.
And they say it.
And the moment of conversion happens.
Exactly.
It wasn't like that.
It wasn't like
that's
that.
That's a shame.
Well, maybe we're missing
wouldn't we all love
market.
That? Yeah, absolutely.
So, but to be a committed Christian and to recognize, well, I'm not going to water down that. So we would have people like Alain de Botton onto the show to talk about that. Alain was really interesting because he actually admitted the reason why he's an atheist is because he's being faithful to his earthly father by denying a heavenly father. And I said, well, that's fascinating. So it's like there's psychological reasons then. So we had lots of really interesting conversations like that. We kind of built the show on like a little creed of ideas that we would be excellent, so we would pursue excellence at every cost, that we would be missional in the sense that we would take a broad perspective to our three core content areas, which were life, faith, and culture. We would be credible, so we really would try and get the best guests on possible to talk about things, even if they weren't Christians, talking about some of the general issues going on in the world. We would be faithful. You know, we would not deny who we were. Yeah. So it was bringing all of those things together. And we had some really special times there with all sorts of folks calling into the show from all sorts of religious backgrounds or no religious background. And so getting to host that to launch it and to host it for those years was a great dream come true.
I mean, during that time and since then as well, you've interviewed literally hundreds of people.
I think it's 2,000 last count.
So, you know, there's so many different voices that have had the opportunity to challenge you, to speak into your life. What are some of the most memorable from that time and the ones that you've held on to during that period?
I find that the hardest question to answer because there has been so many great ones. So from the kind of Christian camp, I waited years, literally years, to interview Richard Foster, author of Celebration of Discipline.
Yeah, one of my favourite books.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too. I've read most of his books.
Yeah.
And you'll love this, James. When I first kind of approached him many years ago, it would have been even probably late 90s originally, and then early 2000s, I got an email back from his personal assistant saying, you know, thank you for your interest. Richard's Clearness Committee have met to discern to that he's not to do any more media for the next 12 months.
Wow.
We thank you for respecting this. How do you come back on that?
There's no answer, is there?
I think it was 2008 or 2009 by the time I got to do that, and it was fantastic. Eugene Peterson, who we've just lost.
Of course.
He was great, although frustrating because he spoke so slowly. Yeah. And in radio, you're just waiting for, you know, it's all that time.
Yeah, you want the moments. Yeah, exactly.
So it was good. The challenging ones that were just fascinating was Brian Deacon, who is the actor who played Jesus in the Jesus film.
Yeah. A controversial thing in and of itself in many ways.
Yeah. This is the 70s one.
Yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely. I mean,
the most watched film in history.
Exactly.
He's not a Christian.
Yeah.
And so to talk about that, and he said, well, I came as close as possible while I was shooting that film. Mm. And fortunately, one of the aspects was then seeing the, you know, some of the negative aspects of the kind of large American church at work that he didn't like to see. And yet we, you know, we had a great conversation as to where he was at now. That's where I came alive, is in the middle of those kinds of conversations. So Brian was interesting.
And of course, that journey of with the show and broadcasting on a regular basis kind of came to an end a number of years ago, and then you came to the UK. What prompted that move? Why come here, of all places? I mean, you had the sunny warmth of, you know, kind of the Gold Coast, keeping you happy to the somewhat mediocre greyness out of our window this morning in Westminster.
Right.
What prompted the UK? Why come here?
Yeah, so many people. In fact, there was the leader of the National Psychics Association in Australia.
Yeah.
When he heard, you know, so this is the kind of people that we were engaging. He said, "Why on earth are you going to the UK?" And he was a Brit. He said, "Why? No, I came over here 20 years ago to get away from all that." A whole book has been written about that, quite literally, called Resurrection Year. During the 10 years that all of these dreams were coming true, including that open house show that we've been talking about, and all these other great things happening for me and career and ministry and things, my wife and I were trying to start a family, tried everything that we felt comfortable trying, and that came to a screaming halt on Christmas Eve of 2010, when we got the second of two phone calls. The first one, on our very last embryo being transferred after our final round of IVF, after 3 years of trying to adopt and multiple rounds of IVF and special diets and special supplements and chiropractic, don't know what we tried, healing prayer, we tried everything. Final embryo to be transferred, we'd already decided this is it.
Yeah.
This doesn't work, we're moving on. We were told we were pregnant, and family and friends had erupted in applause, and there was jubilation. And then quite literally on Christmas Eve, we got the second call saying, "I'm sorry, we got it wrong." And so that just brought everything down, particularly for my wife. And Maren really only had two dreams in life. One was to become a mum, and the other one was to live and work overseas. And so it was time for the consolation prize.
Right.
And when she got offered a job at a little university called Oxford University.
Heard of that.
Heard of that?
Yeah.
We saw that as kind of God's new beginning for her, and it really was a new beginning.
Yeah, of course.
For her.
And so,
for me.
So you come to the UK, and you come settling in, and despite the president of the Psychic Society not seeing it in the crystal ball somewhat before, this kind of major life moment, kind of happens, of the disappointment of what's happened with the infertility. And it's a journey that you and I have both kind of been on and discussed, but something that is very hard to reconcile with our beliefs in what God says about kind of going into the world and multiplying. But you've had this ability since then to really tell that story as you've come to the UK, and in many ways impart that to many other people that have birthed so many other ideas from it. What's that journey been like of kind of seeing that story, particularly earlier this year when it went into very much into the mainstream media? You were doing interviews for the BBC, the book was coming out, the opportunities to kind of talk about that topic that is so often left hidden and often actively hidden. What has been the biggest thing you've learned from going through that process?
It's been a difficult one, because this is not the topic I really wanted to go public on. It was Adrian Plass, who a number of our listeners will know, Christian author, who suggested that I should write our story into a book, and it wasn't even on my radar. I was thinking elsewhere about other books. But when I came to the UK, I mean, everything closed down. BBC weren't returning my phone calls at that stage, even though I was being, put forward by well-connected people, and publishers were turning me down because I didn't have any profile here.
Which year was this?
This was 2011.
Right.
And then moving to 2012.
Yeah.
So then I started writing Resurrection Year in 2012, got rejected by publishers here. One publisher said, "Come back to us when you're famous." And I'll work on that for the next couple of weeks and I'll get back to you.
Yeah.
And then it was picked up by Thomas Nelson, biggest Christian publisher in the world, top five mainstream publisher in the world. And then it came out in 2013, and then things started to move on from there. The first few years being here were tough, I have to say. A good deal of that to do with identity. I think it's the great human question, who am I?
Yeah.
And the great answer to that for the Christian is that despite any other role that I might have as a mother, as a father, as a media person, as an artist, as a business person, whatever, other roles that you fulfill, the greatest message that we have is that actually you're a child of God, and all of those other roles are good, but they're secondary and they can go. Being a child of God is central. I had spoken about this, I had written about it, but then when I came to the UK, I realized actually, Sheridan, the majority of my identity was tied up in being a broadcaster.
Yeah.
front-facing, public-facing person, mm-hmm. when nobody was listening to me anymore, I felt, you know, bereft. So the big journey has been really rediscovering who I really am at my deepest level. Mm. Going public with the story was another matter that then took me into very different areas that I never really wanted to, or, you know, I dreamt of talking about. But I have to say, James, it's been the most fruitful few years possible, because it is connected. You asked me what I've learned. I've learned that when you share your pain vulnerably, you not only create some space for yourself to heal, you actually open up the space for other people to heal.
That's right, yeah.
And so talking about, you know, men and childlessness and infertility and low sperm count, you know, not really my brand dreams, if you want.
No, mine either.
But we've
been there.
Yeah, indeed. But what happens is, when we actually do share about it, there's a whole bunch of guys that are kind of listening around the corner. Yeah. Don't really want to be identified, but they go, oh man, somebody else is talking about this.
That's right. Yeah.
Now I can. Because I bet you probably felt, as I did, incredibly isolated during those
times. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. It's something that no one wants to talk about, and you don't, it's not something that comes up down the pub, you know, in the weeks prior to you finding something like that out, right? So
exactly.
You don't know until those situations come along who you should talk to about those issues.
Yes.
Vulnerability is an interesting thing that you kind of touched upon there. In the past couple of years, there seems to have been a shift towards this ability for vulnerability to be something that we display. You know, obviously people like Brené Brown, who've, you know, massively catapulted that through her TED Talk and recent books, into a space where it feels acceptable to take what used to be unacceptable into the limelight and talk about it. Do you see that this is, you know, a movement that, particularly for us as men, and particularly men in the media, are going to finally be able to kind of realise some of those problems that we should all have been talking about many years ago finally come to light? Do you actually see a real tidal shift happening, or is this just a one-off issue?
I wouldn't say it's a tidal shift, but I think there's definitely a wave building. Mm. Maybe that's the metaphor to use. Last year, when I was shooting something for BBC Breakfast, me and the cameraman got chatting, and he said, last night I was in the pub talking with my mates, and we got talking about depression. And it turns out some of the guys were on antidepressants. And he said, you know, a decade ago, we would never have shared about that because we would have been kind of seen to be weak. Mm. So there's progress being made on that. And then I got a bit cheeky and I pushed him and I said, what about low sperm count? Could you talk to your mates in the pub about that? And he said, no. If anything, we'd be joking about the opposite being the case.
Yeah.
So the wave is building, and people can share things now without too much fear of some sort of slap back in a way that we never could before. But we're not quite there yet on some issues. Mm. But I think it's building, and I think the more that we can actually take those vulnerable moments in appropriate times, you can overshare, and maybe there's a counter argument at the moment that we're just kind of getting a little bit too immersed in our own stuff.
Mm-hmm. Over-emotional, some people would kind of also accuse it of, which in the church has always been seen as something potentially negative.
Right, and just always putting ourselves in the centre of the stories. Oh, this is how I feel, and this is what I went through, and before we know it, you know, it's almost this, you know, back in the 80s, they used to have these encounter groups, you know, where it was only about getting together and sharing the deepest things of your soul, and if you didn't share anything deep and dark and terrible, then somehow you hadn't been truly authentic. Almost feels like we're doing that a little bit now. And so I'm waiting for maybe a little bit of a pullback, but the right people need to be doing it, and some of us need to pull back.
I somewhat see that as a counter to a lot of the digital culture that we live in today, is that so many of us know so much about one another on the surface level already, that maybe finally, if anything, it's giving us the ability to have to fill that vacuum of, well, we can't talk about, like, what did you do on holiday, because we already know. We can't talk about, you know, what we were reading last week, because we already know.
But what a great insight.
We have to maybe now kind of go to the emotional space. It's the only thing that we aren't actually talking about,
know.
Or we aren't sharing, because the data stream doesn't kind of provide it. How are you coping with that kind of shift towards digital, particularly as someone who has to make their living by being publicly out there all the time, and, you know, talking about this new book that you've got coming in March, there's a new documentary next year. You know, that's a compulsion, I suppose, almost, to have to be always on, particularly when you don't have a one fixed career mode. You know, you're a freelance arts person making your own way in the world. Do you feel a tension there that you have to always be on and showing a version of yourself whilst also in many cases dealing with these really tough emotional issues as well?
I really do. Just this last week I was leading a retreat up in Scargill House in North Yorkshire, and I didn't tweet or put anything online the whole week, and I felt anxious every night that I hadn't. But it was such an intense retreat because we were dealing with people's broken dreams, and you know, I think I spoke 10 did 10 sessions in 5 days, so it was, you know, really quite intense just in terms of content. Then there's meeting together with people afterwards and praying with people and things. I did not have any headspace to post anything, and I was noticing the anxiety in the back of my mind. I'm not putting anything up on Facebook. People don't know what I'm doing. Hang on, Sheridan. Is that really, really necessary? There is a time to draw back, to go deep with a few people. That doesn't have to always be public. And yet, yes, this is part of the space that we live in. So I find it a tension. The way that I deal with that tension is, number one, trying to post stuff online that really will be beneficial to other people, not just always self-promotional. And number two, I actually have Facebook fasts. I actually come off for a month, at least 1 month a year, to kind of come off social media, just to kind of keep those anxieties in place.
Remind yourself what it was like before we had all these things.
Exactly.
I try and cling to that one again.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
As well. Tell us about what's coming next. You're working on this new book that's coming out in March. What can you tell us about that?
It's called The Making of Us: Who We Can Become When Life Doesn't Go As Planned. And it's following on from Resurrection Year. There was a book in between called Resilient, but this is kind of following on. Resurrection Year was a memoir talking about our story, coming to the UK, starting again. And that's kind of opened up doors around the world to help people, not just with infertility, but all sorts of broken dreams, career dreams, artistic dreams, all sorts of things. I've got 300 or 400 emails now from people who've shared their stories as a result of that. So that's been the kind of world-changing event. And then this book follows on from that, because I noticed that in those emails there were two common themes. Now that this has happened, might be a divorce, might be not having children, might be not having a second child, same grief. Now that my art hasn't made it to the masses, now that nobody's downloading my music off iTunes, whatever it might be, I don't know who I am, and I don't know what I'm here for. The two great questions. And you kind of think, didn't we answer those back in the 20s or 30s? And they've come back again. And so this is another memoir based on a pilgrimage that a friend and I did from Lindisfarne Island down to Durham, and having talks about life and where we're at and identity and calling in a fresh way, particularly for those who for whom life hasn't gone to plan. And I guess I land on two or three key messages, one being when you lose your identity, it's actually the best time to discover who you most deeply are. And secondly, that this tragedy that's happened to you, or this thing that's happened to you, or this great disappointment that's happened to you, could actually be the making of you. It could actually be the catalyst that brings your greatest gifts to the world. And if you manage this right, this could really be a opaque source of powerful service to other people. So those are the two messages.
I find myself in this position, as you know, at the moment, going through career transition, and many of us go through career transitions as a large part of our life experience, I suppose. You think especially of these moments. How much, when someone goes through that, do you think that they should focus on redeeming what has gone before versus focusing on what should come next? Where should the balance be?
Good question. Number one would just be, what is your immediate need? And so if you actually know that within 6 weeks there's not going to be any money for rent, well then you need to focus on the future and just getting something stable. Once you do that, I would say if you can carve out time to actually start to process the past, it can be profound. It really can be profound, and it can take a while, so don't rush it. It can be like a little project that you've got kind of going on in the background. Journal it, talk to somebody about it, read books about it, explore these kinds of things, talk to close people to you, and just start to unpack, who was I then? Was it who I was meant to be? What of that season can I learn from? And what are the space that I now have is actually going to be there as a channel for God's blessing and power to actually flow through? That's kind of the big metaphor that's come out of this. Then when we lose something, there's a space in our life that's been made. And I've discovered, just like the Apostle Paul, you know, he said, when I'm weak, actually, then I'm really strong.
Yeah.
The verse we don't often look at is 2 Corinthians 4, where he talks about all the persecution he's experienced and other apostles have experienced. He comes up with this really intriguing phrase. He says, death was at work in us, but life was at work in you. And it seems to be that when we have those little deaths, those little things that are lost, careers or family members or relationships or whatever, if we put them into God's hands, they can actually become spaces through which his power and blessing can flow to other people. That's what we've experienced with being childless, is that that space opened up a channel through which now a lot of people are starting again from their own broken dreams. I had a Carmelite brother, you know, a monk, say, listen to my story, and he said, would you look at that? Would you look at what God's doing? The lack of a birth in your life is birthing life in others. Yeah. It's like, whoa. Yeah. So if you can, carve out time to reflect on those things and see what that space can actually open up in terms of being a blessing to other people.
Often when these things happen, like your example with childlessness or you know, kind of the loss of a family member through something, that is often, there's no one to blame for that situation, and so we turn our blame often to God. How have you coped with that, and also the other people that you are meeting now through the process of telling this story, not selling it?
Although I'd like to think I'm telling it, but there's a bit of both.
Or both maybe is connected. That was a faux pas. But telling the story, what do you say to people when they come and say, Sheridan, that's great, but like, I thought that this was in my plan because God said this was in my plan, and now it's not? Yeah, it's easy when there's someone obvious to blame. A job goes because someone shafts you on the way out the door, or a redundancy gets made by some corporate decision or something like that, or yeah, you lose something because you did something wrong in a contract. All of those things we can pin something on. But when there's no one to blame, how do we reconcile that to ourselves in a way that allows us to move forward?
You're good at this. Good questions, James. really good. There's two responses, actually, that we discovered when life goes wrong. One is, yes, you shake your fist at heaven and say, God, why? I mean, you just say the word and we would have been parents. And we still to this day actually don't know why. After 10 years of trying, we never got the child. Even the redemption of it, the recycling of it, it's not necessarily the reason, although we can see that that's been a wonderful turnabout of events. The other response, of course, is that you blame yourself, even though, like you said, there's no official reason, but that's what both Marin and I did. Marin blamed God. Why don't you come through for us? I turned it on myself. I was the biological reason why my wife couldn't get what she wanted. But I started to think, well, maybe you're the spiritual reason. Maybe you're not standing in faith enough. Maybe the prosperity preachers are right. You know, you should be naming and claiming and holding and confessing and all of those things. And so I tried that at one stage. You know, I've tried everything else.
Yeah.
And there came a time where we just had to say, this world is fallen. We do not know why this is the case. And to actually let God off the hook for giving us a reason for this, that was a big thing for Meryn, to actually just say, I may never know the reason for this. And to not, you almost have to forgive God, even though he's done nothing wrong, but to actually let him off the hook, that we say, well, you must give us at least a reason so we have an answer to why. And for me, there was almost a bit of self-forgiveness, even a sense of, I didn't choose this. I can't see anything that I did in the past that would have made me have a low sperm count. And with the whole faith thing, I just had to go through that and see that it was a load of rubbish. And then just go, drive me back to scripture, see that all the prayers that Jesus really blessed were actually prayers of, you can do this.
Yeah.
And he said, I haven't seen such great faith in Israel. I'm going to give it to you. That's all it was. And so it takes you deeper, takes you bigger. But there's no doubt that there's a process to go through in that, in working those kinds of things out. And it can take years. So there's no short answer. But the big answer is to journey through it and stay in the room with God. That's what I would say is just, Meryn and I have a saying about our relationship that we try and stay in the room when we're arguing rather than run out and slam the door. Try and do that with God as well.
Mm. You're working these problems out very much in public, in the media, and also in a specific strand of the media, which is both the Christian press as well as also the, you know, kind of the national media as a Christian. And you said on a recent podcast that, you know, why does anybody kind of out themselves as a Christian these days? It's not a particularly helpful thing to do, because it puts you into a certain bracket, perhaps. What are you doing, if anything, to avoid being put in that bracket, or are you happy being put there?
My prayer always with the stuff that I do in public, so yeah, just a couple of weeks ago it was the Telegraph, Sunday Telegraph newspaper. Before that it was the Daily Mail, and then the Radio 2 stuff, and there's been lots of stuff on Radio 4 and BBC Breakfast and BBC News. And my prayer whenever I go into that, because it's probably just me, but whenever I walk through the door of the BBC, I do feel a certain pressure to secularise.
Yeah,
I think it's probably just my own insecurities, but you kind of feel this is a different space for me, even though I gravitate to radio studios, you know. You can't keep me away. And so my prayer is always, God, may I be faithful to who you are, and may I be appropriate to the segment that I'm doing. And so straddling both those lines. And so if I'm going to do a secular newspaper interview or go on Pause for Thought or whatever, Pause for Thought's great because I can be a person of faith.
Yeah.
That's specifically why they have me.
That's why it's there. Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, one of the producers on one of the scripts actually said, no, you need to put more God into this one. So I've never heard that before. So, you know, which is just brilliant. But it's trying to be faithful, so not backing down from who I am and who God is, but also being appropriate to the segment and being appropriate to the spot, and so not trying to push it out of the boundaries of what it is into what I want it to be. And so that means that, my 20 years I've been wanting and trying to speak faith in a way that will make sense to the people that are walking down there in the street that we can see from here. So I get away from Christian jargon and those kinds of things. So those are the two prayers that I have. Hopefully that helps.
It does. One of the things we've returned to a couple of times in this conversation and conversations we've had before is around developing, you said it yourself, kind of spiritual disciplines, or that Richard Foster book, that Celebration of Discipline, one of those kind of things that we often return to on the show, because so many of us are trying to deal with how do we ensure that we are coming back to our roots in faith on a day-to-day, week-to-week, month-to-month basis. whilst dealing with all of this craziness that we inhabit in the kind of media world, you know, we record this on a Monday after a week of some of the most odd British political turmoil with things going on all over the place. What do you come back to day to day to keep yourself grounded, to keep yourself rooted in good discipline? Do you have any tips for any of us?
Well, I do. The thing that is just pivotal for me is a moment in our spare room. I've got a little chair set up in the corner. It's my inner sanctum. Mm. You know, it's Moses had the tent of meeting back in the Old Testament, before the temple, before any of the tabernacles and everything came along, and it was just a tent. He went there. That's where he met with God and heard from God the directions that he needed to give to the people. That's my tent of meeting. I have to have time there, even if it's an incredibly busy time, and I can only kind of go in there for 5 or 10 minutes. I have to be present before God before I then go into the day. So that time is just incredibly important. Generally, I have the space, because I don't have kids, to, in many ways, sometimes have an hour in there. And that is where the clarity for the day comes. And so that's where I will discern, is it this project or this one? Because I might really want to be working on project A, but actually I need to be working on project B. And so that's where I get that clarity. That's where the Pause for Thought scripts are written. That's where the devotionals that I write come out. That's where the book breakthroughs happen every day. It's just the way I write. I have at least 3 major literary blocks, and I get up out of my desk in my little office studio there. I go into the tent of meeting and I wait. And I just wait. And sometimes I'm waiting for a while. So that is key for me. The other thing recently has been working out kind of your mapping your energy. I'm particularly strong in the morning, and so those first few hours, you know, leading up to lunchtime, I protect really quite viciously from meetings or from anything, because that's my most productive time. I now take 2 hours off in the afternoon, which was really hard for me to do, because I thought everybody else is working, I should be working. But the good thing about us freelancers is we can actually manage our own time, and that 2 hours
of us who are good at it can.
Right. Disciplines, right? And that 2 hours, I'll walk the dog, I'll have a little bit of a rest, then I'll actually come back and I'll just do the next few hours. I'll work up to 6, 6:30, and it'll be much more productive. So those are the two kind of key things for me to then being productive and trying to work with God in the midst of all the things, like you said, all the deadlines that come every day.
Creating space is what we need to do. So the last thing I really want to ask you about is kind of this Magi documentary that's coming next year. Why focus on the Magi, these strange men and women that marched across the sands?
Men.
They would have been. I'm sure there's some women somewhere with them.
Very good point. How many people were there? We don't know. No. We talk about 3 wise men. It could have been a dozen. Who knows? It could have been 5. Could have been, less than that.
And probably with a harem and some camels and other things kind of following them around.
Exactly. To actually have the big crowds that would have been following along. Marin and I had a US TV crew come and do a documentary on us some years ago. Well, actually, just a couple of years ago, called A Journey Through Broken Dreams. And that was based on the Resurrection Year book. And then they came back to me and said, look, would you be interested in hosting something? We're looking at something on the Magi. And the Magi, for me, just brings everything that I'm about together. It's about spiritual journeys. It's not an in conversation with one faith group. It's actually one faith group over here going to seek the king of another faith group over there. What's going on? Why? It's all about spiritual journeying. Lots of mystery as to who they are, where they were from. And so this documentary is going to be exploring that. There's 3 ideas as to where they're from. Were they Arabian? Were they Babylonian? Were they Persian? For years I thought they were Persian. This documentary, I think I've been convinced that they're actually Arabian. And you might go, well, what does that matter? it does make a huge difference, because especially at the moment with the conflicts in the Middle East, it actually means there is something to bring these two groups together.
Right. Wow. So, yeah, so that could have some real political ramification.
It really could. Yeah. And so we've written the script. Looks like there's going to be about three trips over to both Jordan and Israel to get the footage. Mm. At the moment, they're just waiting on, they're just kind of bringing in the last bit of funding for it. So just had a big funding boost come through. So it is going to be exciting.
You're at the start of that project, or it feels like still at the start of that project. When you think about the things that you love the most, like where do you get the most energy, in the start, in the middle? Are you a completer finisher, or are you a kind of starter and then hope for the best type person?
All of the projects that I do, whether it's a short script or whether it's a whole hour-long documentary type thing like that, I will find I generally go through three or four very similar phases, and that the first one is a sense of excitement, because I kind of get the eureka moment, the aha, oh, this is where it could go. Mm. I start working into it, and I go, oh my goodness, what have I done?
Yeah.
What have I done taking on this project? This idea, maybe it's not going to float, but I'm already into it. We've got time, we've got deadlines happening. Then there is some sort of breakthrough, and then there's just the hard slog of completion.
Mm.
I don't know if I like any of those things. But there was an author, I can't remember their name, and numerous people have been associated with the quote, but they said, I don't like writing, I like having written.
Mm.
And that's definitely me. Right. I like afterwards, at the end of the day, being able to look back and say, you know what, there's some good paragraphs there, but in the process I find it hard work. So it's only radio really that I can walk into and feel like I'm energized in the moment.
Yeah.
Generally it's, for me, the other projects, it's afterwards that I can go, okay, that's good.
Okay. Well, we hope to look back on some good work in the next couple of months and have you back to talk about it when it's ready to be shown. But thank you so much for taking the time, Sheridan. It's lovely to spend time with you, as always. Too. And blessings for everything that's coming in the next year for you.
Thank you, James. Great conversation. Really enjoyable.
Thanks.
Thanks so much to Sheridan for taking the time to really open up and discuss these difficult, sometimes challenging issues with us. But I hope you found it as useful as I did to really get into the background of his career. If you want to find out more about Sheridan, you can obviously find him on social media and bump into him, I'm sure, at one of our upcoming events, including the monthly pub club that happens regularly in central London, as well as also our trends briefing for 2019. And you can find all of the information you need for those events on our new website, christiansinmedia.co.uk. That's christiansinmedia.co.uk, where you can also find out more about what's going on throughout the year, sign up for conferences, read the newsletter, and get into some of the latest content that is running on our blog, where we've got some fascinating articles being written by our editors and also many of you. If that's something that you're into, you might want to go and check out some of the more recent articles, including reflections on the most recent Church and Media Conference from 2018. And you can also find articles there about updates of what's happening around the world, and particularly here in the UK when it comes to the world of Christians in media. So that's there for you, christiansinmedia.co.uk. For now, I want to say a massive thank you for, again, sticking with us throughout this year and making the podcast what it is. If you've got recommendations or people that you want to hear on the show, we would love your suggestions. You can do that on Twitter or on Facebook. And of course, you can always drop us an email, signal@christiansinmedia.co.uk. I'm your host, James Poulter, and if you want to get in touch with me, you can also always find me on social media at James Poulter. I'd love to be in touch with you and get your feedback about the show. For now, we wish you a very Merry Christmas and a happy 2019 as we enter into it. It's going to be another amazing year for us, and we will hope that God blesses you over this festive period. So from all of us at Christians in Media, Merry Christmas.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.